The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, just taking in all the new information about the vaccines, and we heard what Dr. Myberg had to say. And of course, Israel is very much in the mix here. Apparently, Israel is in advanced negotiations with Pfizer to try to acquire this new corona vaccine. Fascinating story, by the way, for those people who are interested in doing a little bit of research. A couple in Germany who are really the developers of the vaccine that has been developed in cooperation with Pfizer. It's not actually been developed by Pfizer. And they're actually Turkish immigrants, two scientists in Germany who set up this company. Lots of talk about the vaccine, the fact that it's not really a vaccine against being infected by corona, but rather a vaccine against becoming ill as a result of being infected by corona, which means effectively that if we get this vaccine rolled out and people take it, that we will have many, many people walking around with coronavirus but with no symptoms. That's effectively what's going to happen. And then, of course, there was a story somewhere which says the vaccine has to be stored at minus 80 degrees in order for it to stay fresh. And apparently Israel doesn't have any facilities like that. So apparently we're going to start building refrigeration units now. I'm not sure, to try to house this vaccine. But also quite a number of other kind of corona related stories, some of which, you know, one has to really kind of pinch yourself to really believe them. But apparently, there's this new mutation of the coronavirus in Germany that is somehow linked to minks.
Yes, actually, in Denmark, yeah. We covered that. It's crazy. They are culling between 16 and 17 million minks. I didn't even know that mink farming was still a thing or even legal.
Yeah, I mean, I think once upon a time it was a very, very rude word to talk about, you know, your mink coat or whatever it was. But yeah, absolutely. And apparently there are three Israelis who recently returned from Germany and who are suspected of potentially carrying this new mutation that comes from minks. So we'll have to keep an eye on that, because apparently this new mutation might well be very much have decreased sensitivity to antibodies that could in turn impact on future vaccines. It's quite a complicated story. Drama in the Knesset yesterday when a bill was introduced to try to create tourist islands in Eilat and at the Dead Sea. We discussed this a week or two ago, where there was an idea that there would be that the Dead Sea and Eilat would be declared corona-free areas, and it would be very, very difficult to get in there. You'd have to come with negative tests and things like that. And yesterday a bill was introduced at the Knesset, and it wasn't passed because the Health Minister, Yuli Edelstein, became very, very annoyed and frustrated at what he called the attempt to try to smuggle in other unrelated areas and tourist or maybe non-tourist sites as part of this bill. So what he said was that there was an attempt to really try to take advantage of the bill to include areas which are not a part of Eilat or the Dead Sea, or locations which are not really linked to tourism, as part of this overall bill. And he just pulled it and he said, we're not going ahead on this basis. We have to go back and reconsider the bill itself. And so unfortunately, many of those hotels that were hoping they might be able to open up and accommodate tourists will now not be allowed to do it, at least not for now, until that bill is reconsidered and perhaps reintroduced to the Knesset in due course. So that's a little unfortunate. And just another really crazy story about people who just don't adhere to the rules. Apparently, there were dozens of people who were infected by the coronavirus at a wedding, which was held in contravention of the coronavirus restrictions. And one report suggests that not only were 43 people infected at this wedding, but apparently three of the guests have already died since then. One of whom was a very, very senior member of the Shin Bet, a deputy director of the Shin Bet, who actually passed away as a result of being infected by coronavirus at this wedding. So one cannot underestimate how dangerous it is to contravene the regulations. I don't know why people just can't get it.
It is absolutely remarkable. But it's been really a defining theme for Israel, is this infighting in Knesset, in different groups. The country has simply just not united over COVID-19. What's your thoughts on that?
Not at all. And you know, we did discuss it before, Howard, and I think my view remains the same, which is that unfortunately people feel that those who are leading us, members of the government, members of the Knesset, are potentially trying to impose rules and regulations or trying to navigate this in a certain way in order to benefit themselves first and foremost, rather than to benefit the health and the welfare, the economic welfare of the citizens of this country. And you know, we certainly saw that even in the US, where Pfizer can now claim that the Trump administration, excuse me, prevented them from coming out with this announcement about the new vaccine before the election, because there was a view that the announcement may well harm Trump's chances at the ballot box. Now, with retrospect, we see it perhaps wouldn't have harmed his chances, because it was what it was anyway. But the point is that it seems as if the politicians are really using the situation to try to benefit their own political careers and their own direction. And certainly the people of Israel have this view that those who are leading us and guiding us are not doing so in our best interests. And the moment you have that lack of trust, which we see here, unfortunately, people cannot unite again behind the guidance and the leadership in the knowledge and the trust and the belief that we're being led in the right direction. And I compare that, for example, to what I perceive as being happening, for example, in a country like New Zealand, where, you know, the Prime Minister has been very, very determined. She's, you know, made some very, very firm statements. Some of them were liked, some of them were not liked, but I think overall people at least believe that what she's saying and doing, she believes is in their best interest, rather than trying to pursue her own political career. And it is true that she's managed to piggyback on that and win a good election result right in the middle of Corona. But nevertheless, my impression is that they believe in her. And here in Israel, unfortunately, people are not believing in the leadership at the moment.
The one story that I wanted to chat about yesterday was the story about helping Palestinian kids. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we just referred to this non-governmental organization that celebrated its 5,555th life-saving procedure, which took place over the weekend. This is an organization called Save a Children's Heart. It's also abbreviated to SACH, SAC, I think is the way they pronounce it. And this is a non-governmental organization that really goes out to help children who have heart conditions. And the particular operation that was performed over the weekend that marked this amazing event was performed on a young Palestinian boy from Gaza, Mahmoud. He's only 6 months old, 5 months old. At 2 weeks of age, he was diagnosed with a heart condition. He was brought from Gaza to hospital in Israel. He was treated at the Wolfson Hospital in Holon, where he underwent this surgery to save his life. And this was all really made possible by this amazing Save a Child's Heart organization. Their operations that they've performed have been treating children from 62 countries, including children from Africa, from the Middle East, Asia, Europe, South America, as well as many Palestinian children. And they've got over 120 medical professionals stationed in all of those countries to help, first of all, diagnose the issues that those children experience, and then to somehow find a way to treat them. And very proud to say, a former South African, very, very much involved, Honorary Chairman Maurice Kahn, and also supported by Sylvain Adams, who's become one of Israel's key benefactors. These are two people who have really made it possible, along with the medical professionals. And I think that, again, you know, these are stories which are great good news stories, and which we don't hear too much about, unfortunately, to show that there is a level of cooperation, that, you know, Israelis are involved in trying to bring tikkun olam, to try and help the world and to try and save children, no matter where they come from. We we have no a grudge to bear against anybody, whether they come from a friendly country or not. These are children who need medical help.
Well, in fact, on that, I know that Israel offered assistance to Turkey following that earthquakes. We're seeing this. We're seeing this all the time. We saw assistance offering of assistance to Lebanon. So these are stories that that are very much part of the Israeli ethos and culture. What are the other big stories that is taking place in Israel at the moment?
Well, I think one of the things that I wanted to speak about was the fact that yesterday President Rudi Rivlin hosted both the Austrian and the German presidents in Jerusalem as part of the ceremony that commemorates 82 years since the events of Kristallnacht in November of 1938. And of course, so many years have passed since Kristallnacht, and the question is, how relevant is it to us today? Why would we spend time, energy, you know, traveling during Corona, which is something which is very, very difficult to do these days, in order to make a big deal out of this particular matter? And I think that it was the German president who really hit the nail on the head by saying that Kristallnacht was not really the start of a series of events. It wasn't an isolated event. This was part of a whole series of events of anti-Semitic activities that had been taking place beforehand, and which came to some sort of a head on that night in November in 1938 on Kristallnacht, where, of course, we know that anti-Semitism, racism, xenophobia really boiled over, and shuls were attacked, and books were thrown out on the street, and glass was broken, windows were smashed, hence the term Kristallnacht, to try to somehow symbolize the glass, the crystal that was splattered everywhere as these Jewish institutions were attacked. And so, you know, the question is this really relevant to our lives today? And unfortunately, we have to say that it is, because that same anti-Semitism that we saw prevalent back in 1938 is still something that we're experiencing these days, although fortunately now we have Israel as the protector of the Jewish people, not only in Israel, but indeed around the world. And we would like to think that the events that happened on that night on Kristallnacht wouldn't repeat themselves, or certainly wouldn't go without a very, very strong response from Israel and some sort of level of protection that would be offered to Jewish people. Because on that in that period between the 9th and the 11th of November of 1938, the Jews of Germany and Austria, who were experiencing this massive anti-Semitism, had nowhere to turn, had nowhere to go. They had nobody to say, please help me, because in fact their home countries where they were living were really turning right against them. And I think that that with that feeling of lack of belonging, lack of homeless, lack of a home situation was really the key point, which fortunately today we don't have. But certainly, nonetheless, it's an important event for us to remember and to commemorate, and for us to teach our children about that, you know, exactly how that happened.
You know, my father, my late father, would always say to us as kids that you can't imagine what it was like to live in a world where Israel didn't exist. So he was born, I think, in 1936. He was a teenager during those the years before Israel became independent, he said it was a very different place. It was a very scary world for Jews to live in a place where Israel wasn't there. And of course, for our generation, it's very, very hard to even picture that.
I agree with you. And it even goes more than that, Howard. The fact is that most Israelis don't really know what anti-Semitism even is. Mm. They have no concept of what it is. And ironically, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, one of the reasons why I decided to come and live in Israel was I made a vow to myself that I didn't want my children to experience the anti-Semitism that I experienced. And I've managed to achieve that, but it comes at something of a price.
Interesting,
and the price is that my children don't know what anti-Semitism is. They have no idea what it's about. Never experienced it. Nobody's turned around to them and say, you're a Jew, and you know, criticizing them or singling them out for being Jewish. And they've been through the army and they fought for this country and they've never once felt singled out or lost without anywhere to turn because of the fact that they're Jewish. And so, you know, we need to educate our children about what anti-Semitism is, what it was, and we should never ever forget it, because as it was famously said, those who forget history are destined to repeat it, and we would like to avoid that as much as possible.
Absolutely, Anthony Reich. That's where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. Thank you, as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time.